On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, I'm here with Taylor Rhodes of the Houston Astros organization. Taylor, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Taylor Rhodes, Major League Strength Conditioning Coach with the Houston Astros. Been in this role now for 3 years. Coming up through the, well, I'll start childhood, I guess. Grew up in the Chicagoland area. All through, you know, my schooling and high school days, ended up going to college at Bowling Green State University in Ohio. There I played baseball, on the varsity program there. That's where I kind of fell in love with strength conditioning and got my feet wet, in this industry. From there, I kind of got lucky with an interview with the Houston Astros and left there and went straight to Florida. And from there, it's kind of been a ride through the Astros organization. Pretty much touched almost every single level, on my way to the major leagues.
Just undergrad at BGSU or?
I did both there. I did both at Bowling Green.
Okay, I was going to say, if you went straight undergrad right to the pro ranks, that's pretty baller, to be honest.
So,
no, that's good, man. And like you said, you've been almost every level along the way, right? You've been with the org, what, 9, 10 years now, I think you said the other day?
Yeah, this is going to be my 10th year with the Astros, yep.
10th year, damn, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It goes by fast, man. Somebody asked me today, and I was like, I've been here kind of for a little bit now.
Yeah, you look back and you know you think of your early years and it's like, dang, that was 10 years ago. It goes by in a flash and it seems like every season kind of speeds up on you, but looking back on those early years, I feel like I didn't really know anything,
some days I still feel like that.
I feel you on that for sure, no doubt.
So what is your best professional baseball story that you have thus far? You have to have a ton of them, being in 10 years and having a World Series under your belt now. So what's the best one?
I think it's hard to not say the recent 2022 World Series run. I think that just, you know, helping me, between me and Hazael Wesson, who, you know, is in the big leagues with me, us, you know, doing everything from a day-to-day basis and working with our coaching staff and collaborating and doing everything that we've done, you know, from an interesting start to the year with the lockout, and not being able to talk to players all off season. And then, you know, kind of fast forwarding spring training with, you know, a shortened amount of time, and then getting into the season and then ended up, you know, having a great title run and winning the World Series. I think that's probably the best story I have, specific story. Obviously there's countless others in the minor leagues of, you know, all the bus stories and things like that, that you go through the minors. But, I think from, you know, the professional ranks, that's definitely the big one.
Yeah. And I'm sure looking back over the last decade of your life and just going through the minor leagues and all the trials and tribulations, and then like you win the World Series this year, like I'm sure it's really rewarding for you. And you know, you have a lot of gratitude just towards the process that you had to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. People ask me all the time, and I think one of the biggest things you can do is, you know, go through the minor league process and see everything that goes into the day-to-day grind at a minor league level. I think it makes you really appreciate and respect, you know, what goes on at the major league level. Obviously there's a lot more resources and a lot more things that make life easier. But you know, if I hadn't gone through, you know, basically being a clubby at the minor league level and, you know, dealing with food and dealing with travel and dealing with all these other things, I don't think I'd appreciate this role as much as I do. So, you know, I think for me, it should almost be a prerequisite to get to the big leagues, just from a knowledge and understanding. We make our players go through it. So I think it only helps staff if they have gone through it.
Yeah, I would agree, man. I think the time in the minor leagues was incredibly invaluable. And just, you know, I've said it on here a million times. Like, I wish everybody could just experience the minor leagues just from, you know, I think it's better now than when we were coming through the system. But just like you said, being a clubby and, you know, making food runs and like finding road gyms and like getting guys organized and just all the other stuff that goes into, you know, when you don't have the resources and you can still be successful and find ways to get guys to do things, like when you have those resources, you still have those tricks in your back pocket. And I think it just makes it that much easier for you.
Absolutely. 100%.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Oof. I'd have to say, I'll look back to my early years that, you know, I think coming out of college and, you know, a baseball program and stuff like that, where maybe I wasn't as educated as I should have been, or maybe it's just, you know, learning over time. But I think the whole, you got to be as strong as possible, you got to be as powerful as possible, you got to do all these different things, isn't like necessarily true in such a skill and specialized sport like baseball. I think the foundational things are extremely important. If you do the basics very, very well, you're going to have success. And that doesn't mean you have to be the strongest guy in the weight room. You don't have to be the most powerful guy in the weight room. I think you need to have all the foundation covered, before you start, you know, doing crazy things. I think you and I can both sit here and say that there's a million different people out there trying to pitch you different things, from a S&C standpoint and from a baseball standpoint. Everyone's got the newest, shiniest, sexiest thing. But at the end of the day, I think if you do the basics very, very well, you're going to have success. And so I would say, to answer your question, you don't necessarily have to push, you know, squatting 500 pounds or deadlifting 1,000 pounds or anything like that. I think, you know, there needs to be a minimum standard for sure, that, you know, your athletes should hit. But I think once you have that minimum standard, you can, you know, move off of that route and get a little bit more specialized and pursue some other things.
Yeah, it's funny. People send me stuff all the time. I don't know if it's just, you know, being in the big leagues or whatever. Like, oh, what do you got on this training? What do you got on that training? Yeah. What do you got on this for baseball players? What do you got on that? And I'm like,
yeah,
man, there's a lot of different options out there. But I think, like you said, just, you know, being really good at the basic stuff. And the reality is, like, at least for me, sometimes training major league players is doing the boring stuff really well. And you know, absolutely. It's, you know, sometimes that flashy stuff has a place, but, you know, if you saw us training on a regular day, it would just be guys coming in, being consistent with their approach, taking care of business and moving on, and, you know, sprinkle in some of the fancier stuff here and there with the guys that, you know, are justifiably ready for it. But, you know, in baseball, it's all shapes, all sizes, all ages. You know, in the major leagues, we had, you know, one of our pitchers this year was 40 plus years old, and we had a kid that was, you know, 23, 24. Like, it's just a big range of people. And then, like you said, it's so skill oriented that, you know, they're all major league players. So they're all very successful at the game, and then they just get there different ways.
Absolutely. No doubt. I guess I'll touch on another topic that, you know, people like to argue back and forth about. And that's, you know, the aerobic training and aerobic capacity, aerobic base. I guess the way my personal opinion is, I think, you know, there needs to be an aerobic base. I think there needs to be a minimum standard. Once that minimum standard's reached, I think, you know, they're probably pretty good. And I think through my time with the Astros and in professional baseball, I think it's pretty, pretty dang hard to impact that in season without, you know, affecting other areas of performance. So, you know, guys going out and running poles and poles and poles, I don't think that's, you know, the right answer. I think there needs to be, I think you need to chase your principles. And if, you know, one of those is, if that's your principle, then chase it. But for me, that's not necessarily something that needs to be chased, especially with position players. I think position players need to train speed more than the aerobic base. Yes, they need aerobic base for recovery between bouts and between games and things like that, 100%. But I think if the minimum, you know, requirement that we've seen and we've, you know, objectified is met, then, you know, I think they're in a good spot.
Yeah, I think this is something every strength coach has really pondered on back and forth in their career. And the longer you're around, like, you see the pendulum swing back and forth. And, you know, for me, I agree. There's a point where, you know, you have to at least have some sort of standard of it. Otherwise, like, playing nine innings every single day, especially like you're talking about position players, like, is just going to crush them. And guys are going to get, you know, they're going to get fatigued from the workload, and they're going to regardless. So having the ability to recover, I think, is really beneficial. But there is a lot of running in the game that people don't realize. And so, you know, in the off season, you just have to run more sometimes. And I think sometimes guys come into camp and, you know, their legs are underprepared just for being on their feet as long as they are during spring training and all the early work and the running and the games. And it's, you know, people talk about the high intensity sprinting, and it is really valuable, of course, to sprint, you know, frequently, get those exposures. But at the same time, a lot of those guys just get worn out from, you know, that low intensity, just running back and forth from the dugout to the outfield and, you know, covering balls in the gap or backing plays up. Like, there is a lot of opportunity for them running. So again, I agree, in season, it's really hard to impact that without affecting other things. And there are times where, you know, we've had position players like, hey, I got to go for a little bit of a jog. Like, I just need a mindset. Like, I need to reset my mind and, you know, just get a little bit of a sweat going. Like, okay, great. Like, prefer you do this maybe on an off day, and then we, you know, supplement that with some other recovery stuff, get you some good food and everything. But, you know, it's hard because sometimes, like, you know, it's not great for them, but they're going to do it anyways, right? And it's like trying to educate them on, like, yes, I know this is going to help you, but there are other ways that we can make you feel really good mentally and physically from a recovery standpoint without you going and running, you know, endless poles and then trying to play in the game tonight. So it's an interesting balance. And I think people on the outside can just say whatever they want because there's no repercussions, right? Like, they're not working with the team that day where, you know, guys like ourselves, we're in the trenches and we're having those difficult conversations with guys. And, you know, I think especially probably the Latin population, a lot of them have grown up with distance running, right? Like, it's just a lot of those guys like to go out and run. And yeah, I think if you pick your spots, it's okay. But I would agree, it's very hard to find time to do that, especially in a major league season with all the travel and the intensity of the games and all of that stuff. So probably better off for the off season and coming into camp in really, really good shape. I don't think it's ever a bad thing to be in really good, just general fitness shape. But once you're there, like, there are other rabbits that I think you need to chase. I would agree 100% with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important for, you know, the listeners to know that, you know, there is a difference between off season and in season training. They're not all the same. And, you know, you really have to prioritize some things in season by playing every single day. So that, like, just like you said, we push things in the off season that we don't necessarily push in season. And this probably is, you know, one of those areas where we're going to push a little bit more in the off season so we can pull back a little bit in season. And I think that's, you know, important to note as an SNC coach.
Yeah, I think being ahead of the curve with, you know, the legs and the fatigue and the running volume, you know, before spring training helps just get guys transitioned in. But, you know, there's a lot of injuries early in the season. And a lot of it is just that guys are not used to the workload. And, you know, even just being around the stadium, like, you think about a day in the offseason, like, how long is your training really between lifting, running, throwing and hitting? It's probably not that long. And then, you know, you do all of that during spring training, plus just hang out in the clubhouse, plus the meetings, plus the meals, plus the actual, like, game time, like, just the amount of time that you're putting, like, mental focus on something just goes, like, through the roof once you hit spring training. And then it's every single day. There's no days off once you start. So,
yep, absolutely.
Totally agree with you, man. What do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful?
It's a good one.
Other than winning the World Series, of course.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of things. I would say from, like, a value standpoint, I think somebody that's professional, intrinsically motivated, somebody that, you know, obviously there needs to be a level of intelligence and you have to know what you're doing. But then a lot of it is, you know, like, some personal humility. I think those are very good qualities and traits of, you know, a good successful SNC coach. To measure success, I mean, that's really hard to do, as you know, you're well aware of. But in this profession, I think, you know, if you can create buy-in with your athletes, if you can create, you know, the willingness for those athletes to come in and do what they need to do, even if they don't want to do it, I think that, you know, shows success within your program. And then obviously I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about it at the major league level. You know, you have to enhance performance and you have to, you know, enhance, you know, everything that we do on field to win games. And at the major league level, it's all about winning games and developing players to win games. So I think all those things are necessary for a successful strength coach. Like I said, it's really hard to determine what a successful strength coach is.
Yeah, when I first started including this question in, I always just thought of the traits of a good strength coach, right? A successful strength coach, like you talk about professionalism, intelligence, and personal humility, that kind of stuff. And the more I ask people, it's funny to see them like try to decide if we should talk about like the personal side of like, hey, I'm a good person, so I'm successful, or like the actual like X's and O's success. So I appreciate you like splitting that down the middle there. But yeah, I mean, again, at the major league level, it's winning, right? It's all about winning. And it's not to say that you can't develop players and get them better in the major leagues, because you 100% can. And part of that is how you win, right? Like certain players come up, they're young kids, you teach them how to behave, how to be a pro in the big leagues, go about their business. And then some of those guys, the older guys, they're just obsessed with just getting a little bit better. And that little edge makes a difference in the major leagues. It really does. And like, you know, you look at teams that get into the postseason, especially those wild card teams, it's always like one or two games difference. And like those little edges really do make a difference. And it's something, it's hard for us to measure. Like you said, I 100% agree, but you know, if you win, like there's gotta be at least some sort of success there. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said before, I think, you know, a lot of what your athletes do and they're a reflection on you being successful. If your athletes come in and they buy in and they, you know, do everything that you want them to do without you having to tell them they need to do this, I think that's, you know, another metric of being successful. So.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that like just being a good person goes a long way, and like taking care of guys, and you know, we bend over backwards for guys sometimes, but at the end of the day, like I always feel like it's worth it. I go home after a game and, you know, usually I'm exhausted just from, you know, taking care of everybody all day. And like, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to do it again tomorrow. Right. And like, yep. You know, you're exhausted. It's 3 a.m. You got off a flight. Like, all right, we got to do it again tomorrow. And that's okay. Like it's a good life. And I think it's been mentioned on here before, like you have to be a little crazy to stick around a long time to like really see this play out. But if you're the right kind of crazy and you are like willing to stick it out, like in the end, at least for me, I think it's really worth it to try to pursue the highest level.
Absolutely. 100%.
Do you have advice for others in the field, either young coaches looking to get in or just older coaches that are just trying to stay on top of things?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, especially young coaches getting in, you know, I think you see success from my lens through, you know, other strength coaches and things within the industry. I think people that work hard obviously have great success. In this industry, you have to work hard. You're not going to get a lot of the recognition. So just know that. You have to be humble, like I said before. You're literally doing your job so other people can succeed. And a lot of times you get zero recognition for it, and you have to be okay with that. And if you're not, then it's going to be a pretty difficult road for you in this industry. And then the last one I would say is just, you know, you have to be passionate about SNC. As you and I know, especially at the lower levels, it's, you know, a grind, and you're not going to get paid well. And, you know, the hours are crazy and the work and the schedule are crazy. And, you really have to know what you're getting into, to get into this industry. So, you know, not that, you know, you can't make good money or anything like that. I think you just have to put your time in, and, you know, those things will come. But getting into, the industry as a young coach, know that, you know, those things aren't guaranteed right away, and you're going to have to, you know, put your time in and do some things you don't want to do to get where you want to be.
Yeah. I love all of that, man. I wrote this extra and I circled it: do your job so others can succeed. I think that's that's brilliant. That's really what we do. And sometimes it's thankless, right? And but the thing is, like, when you do something and a guy is, sometimes all it takes is like, hey man, thank you, I appreciate it. And you're like, dude, that's all it took for me, right? But even if you don't get that, like, the guys do really appreciate what you do for them. Sometimes they're just in absolute competitive mode, so they're not, you know what I mean? They're so focused on things, but
for sure.
And then, you know, you talk about putting your time in and the money's not guaranteed and the hours are long. And, you know, it just goes back to what we were talking about. You got to be the right type of crazy. And
sure.
I don't think it's to discourage people, right? Like, if this is something you genuinely want to try, like, you should try it, but just know that, like, it's not all, like, glamour, especially early on, especially in the minor leagues. I mean, the Appy League's not around anymore, but that's where I started. And, like, some people think, like, oh, professional baseball, like, Boston Red Sox, really cool. And, you know, I was with the Pirates, like, oh, Pirates, really cool. And then I'm like, nah, man, I was in the backwoods of Tennessee, like, grinding it out, bus rides and, you know, bad hotels. And, like, but it was fine, right? Like, that was what that's I cool. wanted to do. And, you know, it all worked out. So it's not to discourage people, but I think the reality is, like, you have to know those things ahead of time. And if you're still willing to, like, hear all of that and try it anyways, like, by all means, like, in the end, it is really worth it. Like we talked about.
Absolutely. 100%. And I think one other thing is, like, one thing that helps drive me is, like, knowing that my role as an S&C coach just isn't about, like, performance. Like, you can make change in somebody else's life, or you can, you know, you can be there for them in different areas rather than just S&C. I think that's another thing that just, like, drives me to help these guys. A lot of the times, like, you know, we're the outlet where they feel safe and secure, and they can come talk to us about anything, whether it's coaching staff or on-field stuff, or, you know, the mental side of the game, or personal life, or whatever it is. I think, you know, being there for the guys in those situations too is extremely valuable. So.
Yeah, 100%, man. It's really cool, like, to have just normal conversations with those guys, right? And it's like, you know, people look at these guys like, oh, they're major league players, professional athletes. Like, that's got to be so cool to, like, be around them. And, like, it is, but also you get to know them as people, and you're like, you know, these are just good dudes. They're just, you know, they're dads, they're husbands, they're sons, they're brothers. Like, they're just, you know, I've said this before, but one of my favorite days of the year is family day. Like, we go through the work day, we play the game, and then after, everybody's out on the field with their family, taking pictures and playing wiffle ball and, you know, just having a good time with each other. And, like, just being able to see them in that lens of, like, being a dad, being a husband, and just, you know, watching them interact with their families. And, like, it really gives you some perspective on, you know, things. Like, they are very fierce competitors. They're the top of the top in baseball, but also they're just a bunch of regular dudes. And sometimes they just need somebody to talk to them like they're a regular dude and not like, you know, an elite athlete with all the pressure that they have to deal with. And a lot of the times that comes to us. And I think that's an underappreciated part of the job. And also along with that, like, you have to be able to have conversations with people and be like a normal person too. Right.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. And I mean, I get asked all the time, like, what's it like working with, you know, whoever, this person or this person. And, you know, I always go back to pretty much the same quote. And it's just like, hey, this guy's a normal dude with a really cool job, and he's really good at his job. Like, that's all it really is. Yes, they're in the limelight and all those things, but at the end of the day, they're still human. They're still going through the same thing as you and I and you know, anyone else in this world. It just happens to be that their job's in the limelight. So, yeah, I always go back to that and know, like, for young coaches getting in, like, hopefully you're doing it for the right reasons, and you want to get in because you can help people and affect change.
Yeah, 100%, man. Couldn't agree more. So where are you going for continuing ed? Are there any books you'd recommend, seminars you've attended, podcasts you're listening to? Just where are you going to stay on top of things?
Yeah, I mean, book-wise, I wouldn't say there's, like, specific S&C books that I always follow or try and dive into. I'm more of a leadership and, you know, habits type book guy. One, you know, recent book that I read was Atomic Habits by James Clear. Very, very good book on just creating small habits that, you know, will change bigger things. So I think that was a really good book to dive into. And it could be, you know, personal life, it could be professional, it could be whatever you use it as, but it's just creating habits within your everyday life to, you know, affect some change. And then, you know, I'm a strength coach, so I like the motivational books by, you know, David Goggins or Jocko Willink. So David Goggins is like Can't Hurt Me or Never Finished. And then Jocko, Extreme Ownership, those type of books. One sports book that, you know, I dove into more of like a team sport aspect was Legacy, on, you know, the New Zealand All Blacks. I thought that was a great book, just because I could relate to it really well. And it opened my eyes to a lot of things that they do in other cultures. And it talks about building a culture within the clubhouse and, you know, how seniors on the team there lead pretty much everything. Like they're the last ones to eat, they're the last ones to leave, like all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was a really good book from a team culture standpoint. And then I guess going to like S&C related or more S&C related, CEO Strength Coach, for those young, you know, S&C professionals getting into the industry, CEO Strength Coach by Ron McKeefery. It's a good one. It gives you a lot of insight on the industry, a lot of, you know, resume building and things like that, that'll, you know, help you get started, get the jump start into the career. And then I've also liked, Winning and I think Relentless is the other one by Tim Grover, who was Michael Jordan's personal strength coach. And I think he also worked with Kobe Bryant. So all really like it's a wide array of books, but I think they all serve their purpose and, you know, can make you a better strength coach and human by reading them.
Yeah, I like diversified approach to reading. Like, especially as you get older, right? Like maybe when you're young in the field, you want to read a lot of those X's and O's books just to, you know, get some knowledge in the field and, you know, even like write your own practical programs or just experiment on people. But, you know, as you've been around a while and you kind of have a good grasp on all the X's and O's and, you know, especially for us, we've been in pro ball a while. So like, we understand how the strength and conditioning aspect of the game works. Like I think diversifying your reading and just going different places to get information, I think is really valuable. And like you said, books like Legacy, like just seeing how other cultures do it and, you know, seeing how you can apply that within the context of your own clubhouse, I think is really valuable.
Absolutely. And to piggyback off that, to answer a little bit more of your question, I think, you know, seminars, anything the NSCA puts on is usually pretty good. Obviously they're, you know, one of the better governing bodies for what we do. And then anything PBSCCS, obviously you and I are involved in a lot of that stuff. But anything baseball related, I think that's the go-to place. And then trying to think of like podcasts and stuff like that. Obviously this one, which we're on, but then, I also like to, you know, dive outside of S&C. One that's kind of related to S&C would be Huberman Labs. He does a lot of like scientific based stuff, and talks about, you know, different approaches to supplementation or sleep or whatever. And that correlates back to what we do a lot. So I like that. And then, Joe Rogan obviously does a wide array of things, but I also like jumping on his podcast every now and then.
Yeah. I've said this before. I have a soft spot for Rogan's podcast just because my dad and I listened to it on a cross country trip out to Arizona. And, he just has so many different guests, you know, so you don't have to listen to every one, but you know, Kid Cudi comes on. I'm like, I like his music. Let me check out what he's got to say. Or, you know, he's just got so many guests and they come out so frequently. I'm like, I feel like you have to listen to it. It doesn't have to be every time, but there is something for everybody on that one for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then eventually he talks about aliens and then it's like, it doesn't matter who the guest is because he's always talking about aliens, which is incredible. So, Taylor, I'd like to do a lightning round and then I'll get you out of here, man. You cool with that?
Okay, perfect. Sounds good.
Cool. First one, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
Oof, that's tough. I wouldn't say I have one. I would say I have like two or three. First would be Kenny Goodrich. He was my strength coach in college. Kind of got me really interested in S&C, kind of got me into the weight room at Bowling Green and helped me, you know, learn a lot of the basic stuff. So he was kind of the mentor early on and to this day still, you know, reaches out and we stay in touch pretty routinely. And then once I got over to the Astros, Brennan Verner, he was with me for, you know, 8 years, hired me, brought me up through the ranks, taught me, you know, pretty much everything I know within, you know, S&C and professional baseball. He's currently the head MLB strength coach with the Miami Marlins now. And then one other was Dan Howells, who came over from England. He really opened my eyes to a lot of the sports science and stuff that goes on in other countries that, you know, the U.S. is kind of behind on, but we're catching up. So he opened my eyes into a lot of the sports science and understanding metrics and, you know, how we can utilize specific objective measures within baseball and, you know, correlate it back to performance and all that kind of stuff. So
one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
It's tough. I'd probably say barbell just because that's, you can do so many things with it. I mean, you could push, pull, rotate. You can do anything with a barbell, essentially, as long as you're using it properly. So I'd have to go barbell just because I feel like I could rig anything up to do what I wanted to do with it.
Oh, and I'm sure you have in minor leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
What is your biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Professionally, it's tough to say. I mean, I'd go back and just say winning the World Series this past year, and dealing with everything that we dealt with the lockout and still, you know, coming out on top at the end of the year. I thought that was a great win for not only me, but, you know, our organization as a whole. And then, personally, you know, I wouldn't say there's necessarily one specific time, but I think anytime I can have a big impact on a player. And that player buying into, you know, what I'm talking about, or even if it's, you know, not even S&C related, if I can have an impact on a player and they come back to me later on about, you know, other things, I think that's a win, on a personal level where, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, help somebody, whether it's S&C or life, you know, I think those are big wins.
Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I'd probably have to say I would be in real estate, have my real estate license. I grew up in a real estate family. So I would probably have to say real estate to some extent. I always wanted to be a pilot growing up when I was a kid. So that's another thing that I've always loved is just traveling and seeing new places. So I could see myself doing that. But I think that the safe bet would probably be real estate.
Taylor, it's been fun to talk with you, man. Between this one and the group one we did with Wes, it's good to get to know both of you guys. And, you know, obviously I can tell why you guys had success. You guys work really well. And, you know, just seeing you grind up through the minor leagues into the big leagues and then finally get to the peak this year, man, it's been fun to see from afar. And it's been, you know, good for me to get to know you. If the listeners want to get in touch, where can they go? Is social media the best place or should we go somewhere else?
Yeah, social media is good. I have a Twitter and Instagram. Both I think are at @T_Rhodes1. Get at me on there and, you know, I can help with whatever you need.
Cool. I appreciate your time, man. And like I said, it's been good to catch up and talk some shop and, you know, safe travels down to spring training and we'll see you when we play you guys this year.
Sounds good, brother. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude this episode with Taylor. I hope you enjoyed this one. You know, it's really cool to hear his story. He's been with one organization for a decade. He's worked his way up from the minor leagues all the way to the big leagues. And then, you know, obviously he hit the pinnacle of professional baseball, winning the World Series with the Astros in 2022. And, you know, just hearing about his grind and the work ethic and everything, and, you know, having him and Wes on in a group episode previously and just hearing how well they work together. It's a very inspirational story from, you know, both of them and how their paths crossed and how they ultimately ended up winning the World Series together. So I hope you took as much from him as I did. And the three big things that I took from him in this episode are: looking back on what you've done in the past will help you to appreciate where you are in the present. Personal humility can go a long way in helping you to succeed. And sometimes you have to do things you don't want to do to get to where you want to be. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.